Once one of the most powerful faces in fashion, this is Peter Nygaard today. The disgraced mogul appearing in a Toronto court facing allegations of sexual assault dating back decades. Good evening. The one-time head of a business empire is now alone in a jail cell, brought to Ontario from Winnipeg yesterday.
The charges involving multiple alleged victims. Nygaard also accused of sex trafficking in the United States. CTV's Sean Lethong is live outside Old City Hall with more. Sean.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, that appearance was very short today, but what we saw in court or via video link was very emblematic of the giant change in Peter Nygaard's life.
Slumping in a video cell, Peter Nygaard looked nothing like the powerful image he once projected, appearing frail in a toque with stringy gray hair peeking out. The disgraced fashion mogul making a video appearance in Toronto court after being flown in from Winnipeg. Shannon Maroney is an advocate and therapist for some accusers. She says that moments like this bring up a lot of fear for the alleged victims.
There's also hope now that there is some movement on this, and after decades in some cases, that there will finally be justice.
80-year-old Nygaard is facing a total of 9 charges in Toronto, 6 counts of sexual assault and 3 counts of forcible confinement. The time of the alleged incidents ranging from 1987 to 2006.
It has affected people's entire lives.
Once at the top of the fashion world, Peter Nygaard was known for his lavish parties at his private estate in the Bahamas, hosting the rich and famous. In recent years, Nygaard became the subject of sexual assault allegations, accused of recruiting girls for sex, some as young as 14. Nygaard was first taken into custody in Winnipeg in December of 2020. On October 1st of this year, he agreed to extradition to the United States, where he's facing charges of sex trafficking and racketeering. He was rearrested in Winnipeg yesterday and flown to Toronto to face the charges.
And while in court this morning, lawyers presented a list of 7 names that Peter Nygaard is prohibited from having contact with while he's in custody.
His appearance this morning was brief, Nygaard only saying his name and his date of birth. He will remain in custody for at least 2 more weeks. His lawyer, Brian Greenspan, says Nygaard denies all charges. In previous court appearances in Winnipeg, his lawyer said Nygaard's health is failing, as the man who was once called the Canadian Hugh Hefner is now waiting behind bars.
It's easy to focus on the person in front of the court and not have as much humanity attached to these women who are daughters, sisters, mothers, grandmothers, some of them.
Nygaard will next appear in Toronto court on November 12th.
So while he will appear in court for a bail hearing, there's also the question of where the trial will happen first. As we know, he's set to face charges in New York City and also here in Toronto. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. 6 fatal shootings in 6 days. That's the reality in Toronto. Gun violence claiming another life early this morning in Scarborough.
The victim stumbling to the entrance of a gas station and collapsing. CTV's John Musselman is live near Ellesmere and Kennedy with more. John.
Well, Michelle, it started here in this parking plaza, and as you mentioned, it did end at the gas station, but it has local residents here very concerned about the recent gun violence.
Police were called to this gas station around 4:30 this morning after getting a 911 call from an employee. The clerk reported a man had collapsed by the front entrance. He had a small dog with him at the time. The victim, a man in his 50s, was rushed to hospital, but he did not survive. Police say he'd been shot.
So officers went to that area. When they got there, they saw in a parking lot a man slumped over. They didn't know what was wrong with him, so they approached him. They checked him. He had a very serious injury.
Police sealed off a large plaza just north of the gas station. Forensic officers photographed the scene and removed a number of items, including this small utility knife on the grass. Police sources tell CTV News this appears to be a street robbery, and the victim was shot near the plaza. He apparently stumbled across Ellesmere Road to the gas station. The small dog he had with him has been taken by animal control. This is the second homicide in Scarborough in the past 24 hours. 27-year-old Jamal James was shot and killed yesterday morning on Washburn Way near Nielsen and Shepherd. And there were 4 other fatal shootings across the city last weekend. Residents say the recent gun violence is unsettling.
Crazy what's happening. So often though you hear it. It's not good for our city.
They should control this thing. Not to keep talking, nothing happen.
To be honest, like I don't think I'm too scared to live in this neighborhood now.
Back on Kennedy Road, the homicide squad has taken over the investigation. Anyone with information is asked to call Toronto Police or Crime Stoppers.
And police reopened this plaza late this afternoon. The gas station has also been reopened since police have taken the investigation onward. They're asking for anyone with help to give them a call if you know anything. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, John. Meanwhile, there's an update tonight in the fatal shooting of a taxi driver last weekend. The suspect in that case is a teenager. 17-year-old Isaiah Twyman of Toronto is wanted for second-degree murder in the death of 73-year-old Christopher Young. Police were called to Pharmacy in Eglinton on Sunday night after Young's taxi cab collided with a fence. He was found with multiple gunshot wounds and died in hospital. Investigators say Twyman is believed to be armed and dangerous. Typically, police do not identify youth under the age of 18, but the service has obtained judicial authorization in this case.
Just ahead, the widening scope of the Chicago Blackhawks sex abuse scandal. Who's losing their job? Who's keeping their job? And the calls for steeper penalties. His story is a tragic reminder of the risks. Fully vaccinated, Gary Weston died after COVID-19 swept through his men's hockey league.
The outbreak now the focus of an investigation, highlighting situations where virus transmission remains a real concern. CTV's Mike Walker is live in Newmarket with more. Mike.
Well, Nathan, Michelle, league organizers and players are still asking tonight, how did this happen? Health officials say it serves as a reminder that there can be breakthrough infections in fully vaccinated people and that recreational hockey has the right conditions for transmission.
Why we couldn't avoid the scenario.
The organizer of a Newmarket Men's Rec Hockey League searching for answers after 15 fully vaccinated players became infected with COVID-19 earlier this month, including 75-year-old Gary Weston, who died last week in hospital.
It happened on three different nights with different guys. So it's not like one guy came in, came back the Thursday night, came back the following Monday. It was all different nights.
Weston's family says he was healthy and active, and like all players in the 50 and older league, had to provide proof he was fully vaccinated.
I kept saying, well, why, Dad? Why? We did everything right. And my dad was at the wrong place at the wrong time. And it's just... I just broke through.
York Public Health confirmed all infected players were fully vaccinated and that health and safety protocols were followed at the national training rinks. The acting medical officer of health calling this outbreak unusual.
I would believe that one of them was probably infected when they started playing. It's possible, too, if they were vaccinated and they were had an infection, they may not have any symptoms.
A year ago, the United States Center for Diseases Control and Prevention warned that recreational hockey has the right conditions to be a super spreader event after 14 players tested positive for the virus in a men's league in Florida.
Cold air is protective of COVID. In other words, cold air is a bit more dangerous for us. So if you've got a situation where there's a lot of physical contact or close physical contact and people are breathing hard and they're breathing hard on each other and they're doing that for an extended period of time without masks, as they don't have when they're playing hockey, it does start to sound like a perfect storm. I would expect transmission between two teams, not necessarily across a whole league.
Health officials stress the vaccine is still highly effective, but caution, it's not a silver bullet.
Certainly you can get some transmission, and particularly in situations where people are not wearing a mask, they're breathing, you know, they're very active and breathing heavily.
The Newmarket League suspended play immediately after learning of the cases and has just resumed this week. But some players are now opting to sit out the rest of the season. Now, the acting medical officer of health is not recommending any additional health and safety measures, instead urging people to stay home if they are experiencing any symptoms. In the meantime, there are concerns among health officials that there may be some unusual variants, so they have requested genome testing, which could take a few weeks. Reporting live in Newmarket, I'm Mike Walker. Back to you.
All right, thank you, Mike. More than 1,700 fully vaccinated people have been diagnosed with COVID-19 in Ontario over the past 2 weeks. But experts say the trajectory is normal, considering the increasing number of people getting their shots. Our online team has more on their advice at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Across the province, more than 88% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And 84.3% of eligible people are now considered fully vaccinated. That represents nearly 11 million people in Ontario.
More groups have been added to the list federal health officials say should be eligible for COVID-19 booster shots.
I would see this as a phased approach to the recommendations, just as we've had a phased approach in the initial vaccine rollout. NACI will take another look at this over time.
The National Advisory Committee on Immunization says a third shot should be an option for people over 70 who could become severely ill from the virus. It recommends people from First Nations, Inuit, and Métis communities should also qualify. Frontline healthcare workers with a short interval between their first two doses can also be offered another vaccine. And Canadians who receive two doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine or one dose of the Johnson & Johnson shot are also on the expanded list. Evidence suggests immunity offered by those vaccines may weaken over time. Here in Ontario, the province says more information on its third dose timeline is coming next week.
But what about those who haven't received their first, waiting for the moment the green light is given for kids as young as five? CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Well, now that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved the Pfizer vaccine for children as young as five stateside, the pressure is only building here in Canada. Here in Ontario, there are more than a million children between the ages of 5 and 11 waiting for their turn. The COVID-19 vaccine for children aged 5 to 11 could be authorized by Health Canada any day now. And across the province, public health units are preparing for a fall vaccination drive targeted at the youngest Ontarians.
We have our own mass immunization clinics through which these vaccines will be distributed. But of course, there are pharmacies, doctor's offices, and mobile clinics.
The Minister of Education says when it is approved, the vaccine will be offered in the school setting on evenings and weekends, similar to secondary schools.
Within our high schools, we actually have over 650 school-based vaccination clinics as we speak to support the 12 to 17-year-old population. For the youngest kids, though, I think it's important that there's parental consent.
Parental consent has always been key with vaccines. In Ontario, students are required to receive a number of vaccines from HPV to measles, mumps, and rubella. Failure to receive it could result in being excluded from class. The only way around it, however, is if a parent submits a letter of exemption based on religious or conscientious grounds. Some school boards, including the Toronto Public School Board, asked the province to include the COVID-19 vaccine on the list of required shots. But the chief medical officer of health said that isn't going to happen.
It's not going to be integrated into the ISPA at present. We have to look at the trends and the ongoing threat of this virus. If it persists season after season and is an ongoing threat, at that point we would review with government the integration of COVID vaccination status into the ISPA.
Critics of the government say it's a mistake.
It's about protecting our kids. What have we been doing through this, you know, this current phase of the pandemic is making sure everybody can be vaccinated. And so why would you not make it mandatory?
Not making it mandatory now means municipalities are embarking on their own campaigns to convince parents to get their children vaccinated.
And I think it just means to us at the local level that we need to continue to redouble our efforts to ensure that people have access to the information they need around COVID-19 vaccine in children so that they can make the right choice.
To prepare for the authorization, some Toronto parents are now receiving school surveys to determine if or when they plan to vaccinate their children. And public health units have a tiny bit of time. Federal health officials say while the COVID-19 vaccine for young children is their top priority, it could be mid to late November before the authorization actually comes. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you, Colin. Well, this is the weekend forecast kids want to know about. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. Michelle.
Well, the rain has arrived now, Nathan, but the good news is by Sunday, it looks like the GTA will not be dealing with rain. So I'll get more into that in your Halloween forecast, but I want to take a look at what's happening right now because rain is quite heavy, especially along the shores of Lake Erie, extending into the Hamilton-Niagara region. And as you've seen, we've got some heavier rain in downtown in the city of Toronto as well. All in all, this is about 15 to 25 millimeters of rain, and we've got gusty winds to contend with. They're out of the east right now, gusting up to 45, actually sustained at 44 kilometers an hour in the Hamilton area, 19 kilometers an hour in Toronto, gusting up to 31 kilometers an hour. So it's gusty, it's rainy. You want to take it slow out there on the roads. This will be with us through the overnight period. 11 degrees right now in the city of Toronto and also 10 at Pearson Airport. That's where we'll stay overnight as we deal with this rain. I'll be back with your full forecast coming up. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. More fallout tonight from the Chicago Blackhawks sex assault investigation.
One by one, senior leadership now being held to account for their actions or inaction. CTV's Zoraida Allman is live in studio with more. Zoraida.
Nathan and Michelle, the independent investigation found there was a meeting in 2010 where team leaders discussed the allegations. Nothing was done. On Tuesday, GM Stan Bowman and Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations Al McIsaac both stepped down from the Blackhawks organization. NHL Gary Bettman in the past 24 hours now has made more decisions with others who were in that meeting. Kevin Cheveldayoff was assistant GM with the Chicago Blackhawks when sex assault allegations were first made against former video coach Brad Aldrich. Today, the NHL announced he will not face discipline for the role he played and how the team handled the allegations. A statement from NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman reads, "While on some level it would be easiest to paint everyone with any association to this terrible matter with the same broad brush, I believe that fundamental fairness requires a more in-depth analysis of the role of each person." The fallout, not the same for Joel Quenneville. The former Blackhawks head coach met with Gary Bettman on Thursday afternoon and hours later announced his resignation. It was Wednesday evening when Kyle Beach, the 11th overall draft pick for the Blackhawks in 2008, came forward as the accuser in the sex abuse investigation in an emotional interview on TSN.
"I felt like I was alone and there was nothing I could do and nobody I could turn to for help."
The investigation found Blackhawks leadership didn't act when they were first made aware of the allegations, the team at the time in the Stanley Cup final. They went on to win the cup that season, the alleged incident not reported to human resources until mid-June.
"And then when they won, to see him paraded around, lifting the cup at the parade, at the team pictures, at the celebrations, it made me feel like nothing. It made me feel like I didn't exist."
Blackhawks owner Rocky Wirtz now wants the Hockey Hall of Fame to remove Aldrich's name from the Stanley Cup. A statement from the Hockey Hall of Fame late this afternoon reads, "The parties agree that this request is appropriate and that they will have further dialogue, including with the Stanley Cup trustees, on how best to effectuate this request." Now, in a statement tweeted out last night, Kyle Beach says he is grateful for the outpouring of love and support since coming forward, but that it's not just about him, it's about facilitating change. I'm Zoraida Allman. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Zoraida. Ontario's Human Rights Tribunal has now accepted a complaint into possible discrimination at condominiums.
This after a CTV News investigation showed how many condos use the so-called single family rule to keep people out based on who their family is. CTV's John Woodward has the story.
Whether it's the condo that told a gay unmarried couple to get hitched or leave, the condo that put up a sign saying cousins can't live together, or the building that allegedly wouldn't allow pairs of single moms, many condo residents are concerned.
"It's a bit of a relic of a past age."
Many of these policies stem from what's called a single family rule, often put in as a way to keep the condo quiet, but seems to have taken on a life of its own. Changing it is difficult in some cases because an overwhelming number of condo residents have to agree in a vote.
"I thought those sorts of things died out with the Human Rights Code and with the Constitution, so I was quite shocked."
The province's watchdog for condo management companies says it's received no complaints on discrimination, but says if proven, it would be a breach of its ethics, adding, "Our position is that the Human Rights Code is paramount to other legislation and instruments, such as the declaration, bylaws, or rules of a condominium corporation." There may be a chance to test that soon. Condo resident Paula Boutis's human rights complaint filed a year ago has now been accepted by Ontario's Human Rights Tribunal.
"I don't understand why a condominium would be allowed to pass rules that are clearly contrary to the Human Rights Code."
Some courts have found that condos must enforce those single-family rules. The Ontario government has said the Human Rights Code must be followed, but hasn't committed to legislating those rules away. One viewer let us know about a simple way of letting all types of families live together regardless, declaring in writing that any couple is a family. It's worked in one Toronto condo for over a year. John Woodward, CTV News.
Starting tomorrow, Canadians traveling on planes and trains will be required to show proof they are fully vaccinated.
These requirements apply to everyone 12 years of age. Travelers will need to show proof of vaccination, and airlines and railways will be responsible for confirming the vaccination status of travelers.
The rules apply to people departing from Canadian airports and anyone traveling on Via Rail and Rocky Mountaineer trains. There will be a transition period until November 29th. It will allow people to travel if they show a molecular test within 72 hours of departure. But anyone not fully vaccinated by November 30th risks not qualifying for travel. There will be limited exemptions. Meanwhile, the United States will reportedly not require fully vaccinated Canadians to produce a negative COVID-19 test to cross the land border. New York Congressman Brian Higgins says more details are expected in the next few days before the U.S. relaxes its border restrictions on November 8th. Starting then, fully vaccinated travelers flying to the U.S. will have to show proof of vaccination before boarding and have results of a negative test no more than 72 hours old.
In this province, Public Health Ontario is reporting 419 new cases in its most recent update. 279 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 29,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 1.3%.
399 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to more than 586,000 over the course of the pandemic. No new deaths are linked to the virus today. 9,865 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 63 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 32 in Peel Region. There are 30 new cases in York Region, 23 in Hamilton. Niagara logged 18 new cases, with 6 in both Durham and Halton Region. The matriarch of the Rogers family filed an affidavit with the BC Supreme Court today.
Loretta Rogers denounced the actions of her son Edward amid the power struggle over control of the company. Mrs. Rogers says the independent directors that Edward tried to remove had done exactly what shareholders expect of them. They spoke truth to Edward's power. They criticized Edward for attempting to insert himself as the de facto CEO of Rogers and jeopardizing the Shaw merger. Rogers says it brings her no joy to file the affidavit, but she felt compelled to do so in light of her son's conduct. In a few days, the court will hear arguments on a petition filed by Edward Rogers. It seeks validation of his hand-picked board of directors.
The former chief of the defense staff's obstruction of justice trial will begin in May of 2023. An investigation by the Canadian Forces alleged Jonathan Vance repeatedly contacted a woman in early February. It says he tried to persuade her to make false statements to military investigators about their past relationship. 10 days of trial dates have been set. Vance retired from the armed forces in April. He has denied any wrongdoing.
Canadian flags have been lowered since May following the discovery of unmarked graves at the former site of a Kamloops residential school. Today, the Royal Canadian Legion recommended its branches raise their flags before Remembrance Day ceremonies. The flag will be raised in the morning and lowered during the ceremony at the National War Memorial in Ottawa. But it's up to individual branches to decide if they want to do the same and keep the flag at half-mast after November 11th. Flags on federal buildings will remain at half-mast on Remembrance Day instead of being hoisted up and then lowered again.
Meanwhile, the federal government has decided to appeal a ruling that orders it to compensate Indigenous children. In 2016, the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal found Ottawa discriminated against First Nations children by knowingly underfunding child and family services for those living on reserve. It's been estimated about 54,000 could qualify. That means the government could have to pay out more than $2 billion. It insists it will compensate children harmed by the policies, but Ottawa is pausing future litigation for 2 months to negotiate with Indigenous groups on the other side of the lawsuit.
The Prime Minister travels to Rome tonight for meetings with G20 leaders this weekend. Before heading to Italy, he addressed the Dutch Parliament, trying to persuade politicians there to ratify a free trade deal with Canada. CTV's Glenn McGregor reports from The Hague.
Speaking to Dutch parliamentarians, Justin Trudeau cited Canada's help liberating their country from German occupation in the Second World War. And he called on them to bring the same kind of international cooperation to emerging threats of radicalization and extremism on a different kind of battlefield.
It's not just conspiracy theorists and marginalized, angry people online. It's state actors, too, using disinformation, propaganda, and cyber warfare to harm our economies, our democracies.
The cost of Canada's fight in the Netherlands is laid out in the rows of a military cemetery near The Hague, where some of the 7,600 Canadians who died now rest. Trudeau was accompanied there by Princess Marguerite, born in Ottawa while her parents waited out the German occupation in Canada. Later, Trudeau met with his Dutch counterpart.
Good to see you.
Mark Rutte extended the customary thanks.
Young Canadians risked their lives for our freedom, and many of them paid the ultimate price. It's difficult to find words that can fully honor their courage and their sacrifice.
The two leaders showed unity on another front in the fight against climate change ahead of the COP26 conference in Glasgow, Scotland next week.
Prime Minister, dear Justin.
But there is an irritant in the otherwise friendly relationship, the failure by the Netherlands to formally ratify the Canada-Europe free trade deal that mostly came into force in 2017, but is still held up in the Dutch Parliament.
If they're not okay with the free trade agreement with a progressive, allied, green-focused, labor-focused country like Canada, then with which country might they be in favor of free trade with?
Trudeau and Rutte are both headed to Rome for the summit meeting of G20 leaders that will address slow progress by the world's largest economies, helping developing countries adapt to climate change, and crucially, providing them with enough COVID vaccine. Glenn McGregor, CTV News, The Hague.
Buckingham Palace says it's a sensible precaution. The Queen has been advised to rest for at least another 2 weeks. Doctors are asking the 95-year-old monarch to avoid official visits and only perform light duties right now. She's been resting at Windsor Castle since spending a night in hospital last week for an unspecified ailment. But Her Majesty insists she will attend the main national service of remembrance for veterans on November 14th.
A special moment today for Joe Biden, who is Catholic. The U.S. president met with the Pope at the Vatican. Their meeting lasted 90 minutes. The two leaders talked about recovering from the pandemic and climate change. Biden has met the pontiff before, but this was the first time as president.
Still ahead, will you look at that? Some of Toronto's cracked and crumbling curbs and sidewalks are suddenly getting a vibrant fix. Who's behind the mosaic masterpieces?
Well, we have rain in the city of Toronto right now, so I thought I'd check in with how we're doing for the month of October. Up until today, we've had 82.4 millimeters of rain. Our monthly average is 74.5. So suffice it to say, running above that, we're looking about 15 to 25 millimeters of rain possible in the GTA. Heavier rain along the shores of Lake Erie, especially in the Niagara region, where we could see about 46 millimeters total for this event. Less of a deal as we get further to the north, but you'll get more showers in the next couple of days. I'm going to have your full forecast coming up. Stay with us for that. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
We're at the start of another Halloween weekend, the second to take place under the shadow of COVID-19.
Still, preparations are underway as this year's festivities look set to be much closer to normal. Residents are getting into the Halloween spirit. We got a look at this home in Pickering and all the elaborate decorations. There are fog machines and music, just part of the setup here. The homeowners are also holding a Halloween charity raffle with prizes, including Raptors and Marley's tickets, as well as Cineplex gift cards. Now in Aurora, look at this. One family has been working on their Harry Potter themed home for weeks. They say they're excited to welcome passersby once again.
Keep doing this with the current, everything that's going on. We felt it was really important to keep doing something for the community and something for the kids, something fun. Parents love it. They love coming around. We had a lot of visitors even yesterday to come check us out. So we were really excited to see that.
Public health officials say it's okay for kids to go trick-or-treating, but they should stay outside as much as possible and consider including a face covering in their costumes. Indoor gatherings are still limited to 25 people, and masks are recommended if everyone in attendance isn't fully vaccinated. And based on the rain, when Colin was out there earlier with the umbrella, it's a good thing Halloween isn't tonight.
Nice. And those costumes look great. I love that Hogwarts costume thing. If you haven't gotten it by now, time's kind of running out. Get your costume.
Oh, yeah. No, and I'm very excited about this weekend. We're going to have a lot of fun trick-or-treating. And the weather is looking good for Halloween here in the GTA. East of the GTA, maybe in Ottawa, a little bit of rain, but we'll talk about that coming up. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a Trane. So, forecast-wise, it's a little bit messy this evening, and it will be as we get into the next 24 hours or so. Temperatures are still pretty solidly in the double digits for those of us around southern Ontario, eastern Ontario, and the southwest, and they're going to stay that way through the overnight. So we've got the rain, we've got the wind. It feels on the chilly side, but we're actually still relatively warm as we head through the overnight period because our normal low at this time of the year would be 4 degrees. But with gusty winds up to around 50 kilometres an hour, it's going to feel a little bit on the chilly side. So for the city of Toronto, this is about 15 to 25 millimeters of rain, but more rain on the way for those of us that are in areas like St. Thomas or Welland. This could be up to 45 millimeters for you. And you certainly see the signature on the radar where we have those yellows and oranges signaling the heavier amounts of rain. Burlington 12 for you tomorrow, Collingwood 11, Aurora 11 as well. And we'll see also 12 degrees in Uxbridge, 11 in Huntsville and Trenton. The rain will eventually find you tomorrow. So this is how things are going to play out over the next little while. This is a pretty big system. It's a big twist of low pressure, and as it moves off to the east, we'll get a little bit of wraparound moisture and still some gusty winds in behind it. But then some nice clearing for Saturday, and I want to show you how that plays out in our forecast radar. So this is basically right now what we're dealing with, and again, still heavier amounts along the shores of Lake Erie. We've already had a fair bit for those of us in southwestern Ontario. And by the way, if you're down in the Windsor area, a little bit more for you on the way today before things clear out. But you've had the bulk of it. As we get into tomorrow morning, there we go. Another round of showers. We've got some gusty winds. It's a little bit more broken up, though, on the tail end of this system. We do get some breaks. This is around 7 o'clock, and we still have some showers, Hamilton and the GTA, and then some clearing. Winds shift. We get a little bit of clearing into Sunday. This is 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Notice some spotty showers to the north and some rain off to the east, but things all in all are going to stay mostly cloudy, I think, or a mix of cloud and clear sky for Halloween. So 11 tomorrow, 13 for Sunday. We'll be in the double digits for trick-or-treat time, and then we're cooling down considerably next week. As you can see, we're having single-digit highs and lows near 0 degrees. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. Most fans didn't expect this to happen so soon, if at all. The Toronto Maple Leafs have locked up one of their top players for another 8 years.
Got Riley with them. Morgan Riley, game winner!
Morgan Riley has signed a $60 million contract extension. The 27-year-old blue liner was in the final year of his contract. The new deal will pay him an average of $7.5 million a season, and it'll keep him here through the 2029-2030 season. Riley was drafted 5th overall by the Leafs back in 2012.
Also tonight, preparing for the next pandemic. We're not even through this one yet. Why experts say it's inevitable, and we could be heading for another deadly outbreak.
Experts say the next pandemic is not a matter of if, but when.
And you might be surprised to hear where some experts think it will come from. It's the focus of a report this weekend on W5.
You've been warning about a pandemic for decades, and now we're living in one. So do you think people get it now?
Yes and no. The yes part is obviously the year and a half has been such a shock, but what's missing is the connection between how we raise our food and the means by which these pathogens move from their hosts into livestock and into humans.
About 75% of emerging viruses that affect people come from animals. Now, scientists are sounding the alarm, telling us the next pandemic could be sparked by domestic animals on farms like chickens and pigs here in Canada. CTV science and technology specialist Dan Riskin joins us to explain. Dan, how worried are experts you spoke with about a next pandemic?
I think everybody's a little bit pandemicked out right now, so I can understand if people are a little bit like, all right, can we just deal with COVID? But one of the things we learned with COVID was that we hadn't been listening to the experts beforehand. And what we really want to do is find out what the experts are telling us now so that we can plan ahead for what's coming down the road. And like you said, it's not a matter of if, it's really a matter of when, because pandemics keep coming up through human history. And what a lot of these epidemiologists are pointing out is that we grow a lot of our food, the meat, in very conducive conditions to viruses spreading. When you put thousands of animals together in very close proximity, you're kind of incubating for these diseases that can then jump to people. And so they really want us to pay more attention to the way that we're growing our food as a potential piece of the puzzle of how we can prevent another outbreak like COVID-19.
Are there examples of this happening in the past?
Absolutely. I mean, the Spanish flu was a swine flu, right? And so, you know, these are diseases that go through animals and come to us. And so it's completely feasible that a goose is feeling under the weather, lands in a field where there are farm animals, spreads it to some chickens or some pigs, and then that ends up getting spread to the people who work on the farm and coming to us. And if you think back to even just the issues that we had with mink during COVID-19, where we couldn't prevent people from giving the disease to mink, and we couldn't prevent the mink from giving it back to people in places like Denmark. And so we know that these farms are places where transmission occurs, and we just need to think about that for the future.
Are some types of farms more dangerous than others?
Really, it comes down to population density. That's what the experts are telling us. It's not mom and pop's farm, and they're not saying everybody needs to be vegetarian, but when you look at big industrial farms with thousands of animals, which more and more are becoming the way meat is grown around the world, those are much more dangerous than people realize.
All right, CTV Science and Technology Specialist Dan Riskin, thank you.
Thank you.
And you can watch Dan's entire report this Saturday on CTV's W5 starting at 7 p.m.
8 days after a fatal shooting on a New Mexico film set, the crew member responsible for the movie's guns and ammunition is speaking out. Police say Alec Baldwin was rehearsing with a gun that he was told had no live ammunition, but it turned out to be loaded. Cinematographer Helena Hutchins was shot and killed, and the director of Rust was hurt. Armorer Hannah Gutierrez-Reed tells Variety she had no idea how the live rounds ended up in the gun, but claims safety training was lacking on the set of the Western. Rust producers haven't responded to the armorer's comments.
Former One Direction star Zayn Malik has pleaded no contest to charges of harassing his girlfriend Gigi Hadid and her mom Yolanda. The charges stem from an argument last month at the family's home outside Philadelphia. Court documents say the singer shoved Yolanda Hadid into a dresser and yelled at her and his girlfriend. Malik says he didn't contest the claims in hopes of protecting his one-year-old daughter with Gigi Hadid. He'll spend a year under probation.
Ed Sheeran's latest studio album dropped at midnight, along with a new music video. Overpass Graffiti follows the singer after he's left behind by his tour bus and he goes out on a few adventures of his own. The song is on Sheeran's new album, Equals, which he says is the favorite he's ever made. And that wasn't the only new music video today. Lady Gaga and Tony Bennett released a new music video featuring footage from recording sessions for their latest duets album. The new track is Cole Porter's Night and Day, as the duo tackle more hits from the Great American Songbook. Love for Sale is Gaga and Bennett's second album together.
Wedding crashers usually aren't a welcome sight, but one California couple was happy to make an exception as they tied the knot last week. DeSombra and Tasha Ferries were celebrating their big day on the Santa Monica Beach when actor Tom Hanks appeared to wish the pair well and snap a few photos. The couple says Hanks' surprise appearance felt like a sign. Hanks shares a birthday with DeSombra's late brother.
It was very special to know that out of all people that could have been on Santa Monica Beach that day, it was Tom Hanks. And we just kind of feel like that was my brother Dante's way of letting us know that he was there.
The couple says Hanks was very positive and humble, and he'd been taking in the ceremony from afar before he said hello. They say meeting the actor was the cherry on top of their wedding day.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
There's also hope now that there is some movement on this, and after decades, in some cases, that there will finally be justice.
Updating our top stories, Peter Nygaard appeared in a Toronto court via video link today. The former fashion mogul is facing 6 counts of sexual assault and 3 counts of forcible confinement here. The alleged incidents range from 1987 to 2006.
Officers went to that area. When they got there, they saw in a parking lot a man slumped over.
Didn't know what was wrong with him, so they approached him. They checked him. He had a very serious injury.
A man in his 50s was fatally shot early this morning. Police say it appears to be a street robbery, and the victim was shot near a plaza. It was the second homicide in Scarborough in the past 24 hours.
It happened on three different nights with different guys. So it's not like one guy came in, came back the Thursday night, came back the following Monday.
Searching for answers after 15 players in a Newmarket men's rec hockey league became infected with COVID-19. Sadly, one of them died last week. The family of 75-year-old Gary Weston says he was healthy and fully vaccinated, as were his teammates. Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 24 basis points to close at 80.80 US. American benchmark oil was up 76 cents a barrel to close at 83.57. And the TSX Composite Index lost 160 points to close at 21,037.
Supply chain disruptions are weighing on two of the biggest names in tech. Amazon is warning of a difficult holiday season, saying it will spend billions to combat shipping headaches and labor shortages. And Apple says it's lost $6 billion in sales because it can't meet demand for products. The two tech giants saw their stocks fall by around 2% each on the markets today. And they're not the only companies being impacted by supply issues.
If you are looking for a PlayStation 5 this holiday season, it could still be difficult to find one. Sony says it sold over 3 million units of the in-demand console last quarter. That was an improvement over the previous period. But chip shortages mean gaming enthusiasts will face challenges finding a PS5 that's available for purchase at least for another few months. Sony says supply will remain tight into the new year. The Chicago Blackhawks sex abuse scandal remains in the spotlight.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Jackie Crandles and Christina Tenaglia. Jackie, you'll be taking a closer look at the story that has rocked the sports world.
Yeah, who knew what and when and what did those individuals do with that information? Those are the questions that continue to swirl and come out of this sex abuse scandal involving the Chicago Blackhawks. We're going to speak with TSN hockey insider and analyst Craig Button. He's also a former NHL executive. We'll get his take on today's developments, including some accusations regarding the NHLPA, what they knew and what they did with that information. We'll continue the conversation on CP24 tonight. Mm-hmm. And Christina, you're also speaking with Toronto Centre MP Marcy Ian about her new cabinet position.
Yes, she is a rookie cabinet minister. She was appointed this week as the Minister for Gender Equity, Women and Youth. Look, the Prime Minister has been quite clear that the pandemic, we've seen a she session. And this all comes not only, of course, here as we're making our way through the pandemic, but as of November the 1st, that's Monday, the Pay Equity Act requirement for employers to post notices to their employees comes into effect on Monday, November the 1st. Remember, this is the federal government saying we are going to eliminate the gender wage gap. That is her responsibility now. That is her portfolio. We'll speak to her about that.
All right. Thank you, Christina and Jackie. And don't forget, CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. And just ahead, Toronto's cracks never looked so colorful. Find out where these little works of art are popping up and who's behind the mosaic mastery.
Finally tonight, the local coffee shop owner bringing a splash of color to city sidewalks.
A new take on street art. CTV's Janice Golding has the story.
If you look closely, you'll see a little something special along a stretch of Mount Pleasant at Sudan.
Totally a surprise. Someone fixed all the cracks and made them beautiful.
Tiny tiles assembled together to make beauty out of ugly patches of chipped and cracked sidewalk.
I love it. It's beautiful. I feel like it brings in a little bit extra color to Mount Pleasant.
The installations, the handiwork of mosaic artist Metap Murdogan.
This is the first one I made next to the shop.
Murdogan owns Origin Coffee, a Midtown beanery which serves up coffee along with a little art. Beauty that Murdogan decided to take outside her doors after the pandemic began.
Last winter I decided to do that because everybody was very sad about the news, about losing family members and lots of things, you know.
Berdogan started off with three small installations just outside her shop.
I saw the people when they saw it, how they was happy, they were happy, show each other.
And those smiles inspired her.
Then I continue all the block. I couldn't stop myself. I am addicted.
Given she didn't actually have permission from the city to install her mosaics, Metap says she had to work very quickly getting each one of her projects completed in less than 15 minutes.
The creator of the Fill in the Blanks project says the area has been good to her and she just wanted to give back.
It's a gift from me to the neighborhood.
A colorful gift Murdogan hopes has filled some voids and helped lift some pandemic-related bleakness in her corner of the city. Janice Golding, CTV News.
Those lovely little patches about to get a good soaking over the next couple days.
We certainly have a lot of rain to contend with through the overnight period and into tomorrow. Michelle, here's a look at how things look on satellite and radar right now. As you can see, quite heavy along the shores of Lake Erie, extending in and around the Golden Horseshoe, even through the Toronto area. It's quite a lot. And we're looking at maybe 15 to 25, plus a little bit more as we get through the city of Toronto. Rain tomorrow in 11 degrees after 10 degrees overnight tonight. For Halloween, 13 degrees during the day as we get into the afternoon. I think we're going to mix of sun and clouds later on after a mostly cloudy morning, and then a good time for trick-or-treating, not looking at rainfall. That could come some showers late in the evening through the overnight, and then Monday onwards we start to cool down, so keep that in mind. It's going to be a cooler week next week. Back to you.
Thanks, Michelle, and be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website, and a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.
Good night.